Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Faded Tales. I've missed you guys. How are you guys today on this very, very cold day? Ooh, it's so cold, man. Like, minus 27. Can you believe it? Anyway, I'm going to let you enjoy the music for a little bit, and then I'm going to talk more and more, and then we'll get into today's episode. All right? Thank you. Everybody, welcome back to Faded Tales. This is my final season 4, episode 1. This is my final season for you guys because I am graduating it's my fourth year, so I'm graduating this year. Yeah, yay! I hope you guys have enjoyed this so far. It's my fourth season. I did not record for the past few days that I could have, because I have been hectic with school already. I had a project due on week 2 and I had to present it, man. Okay. Well, welcome back to Faded Tales, everyone. I hope you guys are warm and toasty on this beautiful, and I mean it, I'm being sarcastic, that it's a beautiful day in this minus 27 degree weather. Oh, I just wanted to like get a hot cup of chocolate, but I've been also listening to the radio as well. I've been listening to 92.5 for the BTS tickets because I really want to go and I don't want to spend the money because I knew it's going to be crazy as heck. So anyway, now before we get into today's episode, I just want to see how you guys are. I can't really ask you guys because I was thinking of making a social media account, but it's my final season, so there's like no way for me to reason for me to make a social media account. Anyway, today for you guys, I have a special little simple episode for you. It's probably going to be a short one today, as always, because most of my episodes are short because I do these things last minute and never check the time. Today, I want you guys to listen to a sound real quick. What do you think that is? Oh boy, that is a fun sound. That is not what I thought they sounded like. I thought it would be like a more of a whoop sound. Well, that is not a trumpet. That is nothing of the norm. This is the whooping crane, and that's what I think you guys would imagine you would hear. Is thousands of them, like not thousands, I'm wrong about the thousands. It would be a lot of them, so noisy. But if you actually just take a time to like stand quiet on the water's edge, just to imagine how patient nature is, and water is very moving, and the reeds are swaying, and then stop, and somewhere in distance, if you're lucky enough, you might hear it. You might hear that sound, a call that sounds almost unreal, loud, and disrupting like the quiet nature you had, echoing and ancient, actually. That sound, by the way, is the whooping crane. Yes, that is a real animal. This is the story I'm going to tell you guys. Now, the whooping crane. What is the whooping crane? Well, the whooping crane is the tallest bird in North America, if you can believe. An adult can stand nearly 5 feet tall, or 5'3" is the max height. So it's taller than me because I'm short. I'm a short queen. But it's very tall. So, and when it spreads its wings, the wings stretch more than like 7 feet across. Its body is bright white, almost glowing in the sunlight, with black wing tips that flash when it flies. On its head is a patch of red skin, like a small little flame. But what really makes the whooping crane unforgettable is the sound. Because I'm pretty sure you guys still remember that loud, annoying sound. Yeah, the call is loud, rolling, and carries on 4 miles. Early settlers said it sounded like a trumpet echoing across the land. That call once filled wetlands across much of North America today. Well, much of North America. Once. It was once. It was a once call. To be honest, I forgot I wrote the trumpet part. Anyway, before cities, highways, and farmlands reshaped the continent, whooping cranes lived across central United States and Canada. They nested in the wide open wetlands and marshes. They migrated long distances following seasonal rhythms that had existed for thousands of years. But the world around them changed fast. As settlers moved west, wetlands were drained to make room for farms and towns. Cranes were hunted for food and sport. Their large size made them easy targets. Eggs were collected, nesting grounds disappeared. And slowly, quietly, the whooping crane began to suddenly fade. By the early 1900s, people were already worried. Sightings became rare, migration routes broke apart, and entire flocks vanished. Then came the number that still shocked conservationists today. By 1941, there were only 21 whooping cranes left in the wild. 21. That's fewer than most classrooms today. Fewer than most busloads of people. An entire species balanced on the edge of extinction. One bad storm, one disease, one oil spill, and the whooping crane would have been gone forever. At that moment, something different happened. People started to notice. Scientists, birdwatchers, and conservationists realized how close they were to losing the tallest bird on the continent. Efforts began to protected the last remaining wild population, which migrated between northern Canada and the Texas coast. This migration is one of the longest of any bird in North America. Every year, whooping cranes travel more than 4,000 kilometers. They fly from breeding grounds in Wood Buffalo National Park in Canada down to coastal wetlands in Texas. They don't make the journey all at once. They stop along the way, resting and feeding in wetlands scattered across the Great Plains. These stopover sites are essential. Without them, the crane can't survive the trip. And that is one of the reasons they are still so vulnerable. Wetlands are disappearing, power lines cut across migration paths, droughts dry up feeding grounds, storms grow stronger. The cranes don't know how about borders or development. They just follow instinct. Whooping cranes also live very differently than many other birds. They mate for life. Once a pair forms, they stay together year after year. They perform elaborate courtship dances, bowing, jumping, tossing sticks into the air. These dances aren't just for mating. Pairs continue dancing along long after they've bonded, as if reminding each other why they chose one another. They choose to lay two eggs. Sorry, not choose. They usually lay two eggs, but often only one chick survives. The parents invest everything into raising that single chick, teaching it to forage, teaching it to fly, teaching it the migration route. It will fly someday, it needs to remember it for the rest of its life. This slow reproduction is beautiful, but it's also risky. When populations are small, every chick matters. Every loss is felt. In the decades after the population crash, humans tried something new. Captive breeding programs were created. Scientists carefully raised chicks in controlled environments. Some wore crane costumes to prevent young birds from imprinting on humans. Others used ultralight aircraft to teach cranes migration routes, flying ahead of them like mechanical parents. It wasn't perfect. Some birds didn't survive, some forgot roots, some never adapted fully to the wild, but slowly numbers began to rise. From 21 to dozens to hundreds. Today, as of 2025, according to the study, there are over 800 whooping cranes worldwide, including both wild and captive populations. That's a huge improvement, but it's still very fragile. The species is still endangered. Every migration season is still dangerous. One of the biggest threats to whooping cranes today is collision. Their large size and large wings make power lines especially dangerous. Many conservation efforts now involve marking power lines so birds can see them more easily. Climate change is another threat. Rising sea levels affect coastal wintering grounds. Drought affects wetlands along migration routes. The cranes can't simply move somewhere else. Their lives are built around a specific place. They remember landscapes, and when those landscapes vanish, memory isn't enough. There's something deeply human about the whooping crane story. They are not adaptable in the way some animals are. They don't thrive in cities. They don't rebound quickly. They ask for space, quiet, time. And for a long time, we didn't give them any of that. When you see the whooping crane today, you're seeing something more than a bird. You're seeing decades of protection laws, wetland restoration projects, volunteers monitoring nests, people standing guard over something fragile. You're seeing what it looks like when extinction is interrupted. Birdwatchers often describe whooping cranes as emotional. People cry, people go quiet, not because the bird is rare, but because it represents how close we came to silence. That loud echoing call almost disappeared forever. And yet it still travels across marshes in the early morning, thinner than before, rarer, but still alive. Now, the whooping crane doesn't know it's a symbol. It doesn't know it survives a bottleneck that nearly erased its species. It just follows the same instincts its ancestors always did. Fly north, fly south, find water, find space, stay together. Maybe that's why its story stays with us, because it reminds us that survival doesn't always belong to the fastest or the loudest. Sometimes it belongs to the patient, the protected, the remembered. That is the end of my script I have. I'm going to go look up some facts really quickly, so I don't have to give you guys a short thing, even though I want it to be short, to be honest, because I'm really tired. Because, man, I don't want to complain about my journey, but I know I can't. Anyway, so yeah, it's let me see if I can give you guys some more data. So the whooping cranes, to be specific, it's in Canada, but to be specific, it's in Alberta and Northwest Territories, that in between space. Yeah, there was a taxidermy thing about the whooping crane. The whooping crane was formally described in 1955 by a Swedish naturalist in the 10th edition of his book. He placed it with the herons and cranes in the genus Ardea and coined the bionomial name Ardea America, because that's the Latin names for animals. He based his account on those by two English naturalists. In 1932, had described described it in his book, and another in 1950, George Edwards have described it and illustrated the crane using a preserved specimen that had been bought from London, to London from the Hudson Bay area of Northeast Canada. It was a person of the Hudson Bay Company. Yeah, of course it was. The whooping crane is now one of eight species placed in the genus Grus, and that was introduced in 1760 by the French zoologist Mathieu and Jacques Brisson. I probably butchered that so badly. The species was considered monotypic, and no subspecies are recognized. So, yeah, that just means there's only one type of species of it, one immediate subordinate. Grus is a genus of large birds in the crane family. That was like a coined term by him. I'm trying to see if I can see anything else. I showed you the thing. I guess I can say predators. There are many protected nests, potential nests and brood predators, including these are going to be the American black bear, the wolverine, the gray wolf, the cougar, the red fox, the Canada lynx, bald eagle, and common raven. Huh. Golden eagles have killed some young whooping cranes and fledglings. Due to their large size, adult birds in the wild have few predators. However, the American alligators have taken a few whooping cranes in Florida. And the bobcat has killed many captive-raised whooping cranes in Florida and Texas. Bobcats caused a great majority of the natural mortalities among whooping cranes, including several ambushed adults and the first chick documented to be born in the wild in 60 years. Adult cranes can usually detour or avoid attacks from medium-sized predators such as coyotes. But captive-raised cranes haven't learned to roost in deep water, which make them vulnerable to ambush. As they are less experienced, juvenile cranes may be notably more vulnerable than the bobcat. Yeah. Let me see. Oh, I can tell you their diet too. So they are omnivores, which means like that they eat both meat and plants, I think. Yeah, plant and animal matter. So yeah. But it's like, this is like more towards what normal cranes are. But the funny thing is a red crown crane, which is a different animal altogether, could actually have more carnivorous diet. But anyway, let's get back to the whooping crane. In their Texas winter grounds, this species feeds on various crustaceans, mollusks, grasshoppers, fish such as eel, some small reptiles such as snakes, mice, voles, plants, acorns, and fruits such as wolfberry. Potential foods for breeding birds in summer include frogs, snakes, small rodents, small birds, fish, aquatic insects, crayfish, clams, snails, aquatic tubers, and berries. Some have reported saying that they've been eaten bleeding blue crabs as well. Some also eat waste grain, including wheat, barley, and corn. And, let's see. That's all I have, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's all I have today. Thank you guys for joining me on my first episode. For season 4 episode. It might be like an opposite thing because I have to focus on my schoolwork as well. But this is a fun time. I love doing this podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you guys stay warm, stay safe, and remember that that many animal stories have lingered, and lives have almost disappeared. So remember, there is always a faded tale around you. So thank you. I hope you guys have a wonderful time. I hope you guys have a beautiful, beautiful, warm hot cup of cocoa or whatever you drink. And yeah, goodbye.